How often have you been told you look like Lando Norris?
So let's say Williams posts something about me. I just look on Twitter and it's like, he looks like Lando. Oh, it's Lando. Oh, I thought Lando was announced for Williams or something like that. The short answer is it happens a lot.
Hello and welcome to the Feeder Series podcast, and welcome to the first episode of 2023, where we get to talk about Formula 2 and Formula 3. Both championships returned to action this last weekend for four barnstorming Bahrain battles. And as you may expect, we're going to do a deep dive into the sensational stuff in Sakhir all this episode. And we'll also ask all of the burning questions, and there's a lot of them from what I've seen that's on your mind for our guest. I'm your host, Jim Kimberley, and I'm as excited as you to get stuck in. So let me introduce that guest. He's fresh from racing around Bahrain in the season opening round with the reigning F3 teams champions. And it was a weekend on the edge of the points and wheel bashing with his new teammates. We'll hear all about that in a second, but welcome back to the podcast, two-time F3 podium finisher, Williams Driver Academy member and Prema Racing driver, Zach O'Sullivan. That was a bit of a mouthful. I'm guessing you're more excited to return to the podcast than you were to join your second season of F3, right?
Of course, yes. Video Series podcast is always top of my list.
Well, I'm glad to have you back on. How was Bahrain, just briefly? We're going to ask all the questions in a second, but you say you were back yesterday as a time of recording.
I mean, a bit of a tricky weekend. I think anything that could have not gone to plan ended up not going to plan. I mean, it was my mistake in qualifying. I got the lap disallowed. And it just happened to be such a close qualifying that it put me down in 18th. So, the races were a bit tricky. It's always a bit tricky to come through. For whatever reason, I always seem to be on the wrong end of all the battles and stuff. So one of those weekends, I think at least the pace was there, but a weekend to forget.
Well, unfortunately, it's not going to be forgotten too soon because we're going to dive deep into it in just about a minute or so. But we're also going to talk about Formula 2. Now, somebody isn't joining me at the moment, but hopefully going to join a little bit later to talk about Formula 2. But I've been reliably informed that Zach O'Sullivan also did watch a Formula 2. So you ready to be a guest pundit as well and do two jobs, Zach?
I am.
Let's talk about Formula 3 first. I think that's only fair, Zach, that you were racing, it's back, and you switched from one big name in the Feeder Series world, Carlin, over to another with Prema. Now, before we get properly into the season opener, how have you enjoyed the off-season? Did you spend a lot of time familiarizing yourself with your new team, your new teammates? Do you speak Italian fluently now?
Italian is work in progress. I feel like the last round of F3 is obviously a Monza, so Italian race. By then, my Italian should be a bit better. So hopefully I can show it off there. I enjoyed the winter. Obviously nice to have some time off, especially after post-season testing. As you said, a bit of getting used to a new team. So getting to know my engineer a bit better across the winter. Obviously in F3 and F2, 3 days of testing and you're straight at the first round. So it creeps up on you quite fast. So I think, getting to know how to work with a new team, et cetera, is pretty important. I think I did that pretty well over the winter.
How different is it? Like, Prema are so well-respected within the Feeder Series world, getting so many championships in the last few years. Carlin, massive, or Rodin Carlin, should I say now, to be completely correct. Also huge in the Feeder Series world, but I get the impression two different ways of operating. Has that been an adjustment for you?
Yeah, a bit. Obviously, they're broadly quite similar, both big experienced teams. So the general way of engineering, et cetera, is all fairly similar. A couple of different processes, as expected. Perhaps the change was maybe a bit more than it would be for anyone else since I'd spent 3 years at Carlin. So it was almost ingrained into the way they worked, et cetera. It was nothing too unusual, too out of the blue for me to get used to, and didn't take too long at all.
Did you find that the car setup was, with their amount of experience that they've got with that, that seems to be one thing that I've heard from other Prema drivers, they just nail it pretty much instantly. And aside from tire wear over this last weekend, how was that going with testing and so on? Did you have more data to work from, or is anything particular with Prema the way they work?
Yeah, well, obviously, they've always been at the front in F3. So any data you have is always front-running data, which is always quite useful, quite relevant data. I think Bahrain was a bit of a tricky one. We still had some work to do through testing, especially to get on the pace on one lap, which we did somewhat in qualifying. But yeah, I mean, of course, with that relevant data, any comparisons you make, you know, are to front-running drivers. So there's no, there's far fewer question marks, I'd say, going into a season, which is always nice. And in terms of setup, I mean, for sure, the car is good. No one's perfect. There's always small adjustments you can do, especially Bahrain is quite a unique circuit. So yeah, we'll see. Obviously, it's early now, but yeah, so far, so good.
No one's perfect. Speak for yourself, Zach. How dare you? It was a point less weekend for you, but I'm hoping it wasn't pointless as well, because it's a pretty stacked grid, and the rookies coming from Freca, Euroform, and everywhere they were coming from seem to show they're pretty damn capable after the feature race podium that we saw. How did you find the weekend without using the word tyre degradation?
Without using tyre degradation? It was okay. Like I said at the start, I think in qualifying, for sure, we had the pace for pole, which probably makes the whole mistake and track limits thing a bit more irritating. Obviously, I had a purple sector too. So it was positive, because even in the 3 days of testing over one lap, we struggled a bit. So we made some changes for the race weekend. And for me, it felt like a step forward. And that was nearly shown in qualifying. But to be honest, from there, I knew it was going to be quite a tricky weekend. Luckily, you can overtake at Bahrain. But I think once you're outside of that kind of top 12 to 15, it's quite hard not to get caught up in small incidents, and finding the space to kind of make ground is always quite tricky.
Yeah, I thought you did pretty well from where you were, which you largely remained incident free, and then from what the stewards thought, it wasn't even an incident that you were responsible for, with the incident with your teammate Aaron. But I did mention the rookies, and the person that's not here would answer this question. So this is now you, Zach. Did the rookies surprise you? Did you have any standouts that you didn't expect to do as well as they did? Because, like I said at the start, the podium that we had in the feature race was all rookie, which was quite impressive.
I wouldn't say it surprised me. I think last year as well, the rookies were pretty much straight onto the pace. Obviously, Franco was on pole. I think Gregoire as well was at the front in round one. And you saw the end championship result as well. It was always rookies fighting for wins towards the end of the season. So it seems like Freca prepares drivers well for F3. They're straight on the pace when they jump in. So yeah, I mean, I wasn't really expecting to have, let's say, a clear advantage going into round one, especially after testing. You could see how close it was with a lot more teams even than I thought would be in contention, which is a good thing. I think you saw in quali was at the top. Top 12 was 2.5 or 3 tenths. So yeah, it was crazy, crazy close.
Right. So I looked at the top 20, I think. We're all covered with about a second, which was insane. That level of one mistake, especially in an F3 car, how low you could end up qualifying, as unfortunately you exempt.
As I found out.
Exactly. Yeah. Just another tenth, and it could have been all the difference. You've just mentioned Franco briefly there, and you've now got Franco Colapinto. You've also got Ollie Gray also joining you to look to reach Formula One with Williams in the future. Has that changed anything for you? And on the whole, how's this first year been as an academy member?
Yeah, I don't think it's changed too much. Obviously, I'm still doing my job, do what I got to do. Obviously, it's nice to have some other academy drivers in F3. Last year, with me and Logan, obviously, we could talk a bit, but we were doing separate things always on the weekend. So it's always nice to catch up with them a bit more this year. Yeah, in regards to my first year, I've really enjoyed it. Obviously, first year in any kind of academy related to an F1 team. So, yeah, I mean, I've enjoyed all the experience of Williams, getting to know everyone back at Grove, a lot more stuff in the simulator, etc. So I feel a lot more part of the team this time than I did, now that I did 12 months ago, which is always nice. And yeah, everyone was super welcoming in my first year. Yeah, I'm enjoying it.
How's the race weekends for you? Do you spend a lot of time in the garage after you finish all your racing fun on a Sunday?
Lunch is the main thing. because Without sounding rude, F3 and F2 hospitality isn't the best. Well, the food isn't the best.
I have heard this
And
on the
because our
podcast
race,
before.
yeah, it's also quite expensive for what it is. But anyway, moving on. Because our races are quite early in the morning, I usually have the rest of the day off pretty much. So I go down to Williams, get some lunch. And then depending, to be honest, on what time my flight is on the Sunday, I might stay at the track or go back to the hotel and watch the F1.
Go back to the hotel to watch the F1. That's a
Yeah.
joke.
Yeah. But
Oh.
I mean, you see more on TV than you would on track anyway, I think.
But you're going to the garage or something, Zach. There are people screaming in the podcast right now. Of course, it wasn't just Formula 3 on this weekend. There was also Formula 2, and we are the Feeder Series podcast. It'd be remiss of me not to talk about Formula 2, especially with this guest pundit joining us, Zacho Punditon.
Yep.
The biggest and best news of the weekend, from my point of view, Zach, a young chap with a couple of races under his belt stood on the top step of the podium for the first time. And as an unbiased journalist and the unofficial leader of the Ralph Bosham fan club, I was delighted. How was that, do you think, watching that race? Because he just seemed to avoid all the chaos and then boom.
Yeah, in the feature race as well. I mean, it looks like for sure Campos have made a good step up this year, both in F3 and F2, which is nice to see. I think the more teams you get competing at the front, the better the racing is, the closer it is. And yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone could really challenge Porsche in the feature race that much. But yeah, he avoided all the melee on lap one. And yeah, the pace was strong. I think both for him and Miney as well. They're able to hold inside that top three and four for a long period.
Yeah, well, I did have a note here about Miney because you raced against Miney last year as well, and you had impressive drives from Maloney, and how many happy places he get in the feature race as well. And then Victor Martin did so well in the sprint race. Unfortunately, I think a bit more trouble with feature race, but also qualified extremely well. ART front row, amazing. You race against these guys. Is this surprising you, or do you think that this is actually exactly what you'd expect from the quality of those drivers?
It's pretty much what I expect, I think. Obviously, you have your 3 days of testing, so everyone should be there thereabouts going into round one. And you've seen from years in the past as well, rookies who've done well in F3 go into F2, they don't take too long to get up to speed, as do rookies coming from Freca into F3 and vice versa. So yeah, I don't think the rookie thing is that much. It seems like everyone get onto it pretty quickly. I think the experience maybe helps a bit more on the races with different management aspects or knowing when to pick your battles. But it didn't really surprise me that they're on the pace.
I think you saw a little bit of that with the way that Richard Vachon and Porcher and Bosch managed to make their tires work while punishing some of the other drivers. I mean, Maloney just seemed to nail that car straight away.
Yeah.
The thing from my side, just a quick one on Kush, that I just feel if he was capable of this in his debut in Formula 2, he just seemed to be a little bit more inconsistent in Formula 3. I know you've not had the experience to drive the Formula 2 car. Is that something you can imagine is down to the car, or is this maybe more representative of the team that maybe struggled last year? Maybe Kush?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I think he had quite well. I remember he had a strong Bahrain. He I think got done with the Weybridge penalty, but he was P3, I think, in quali last year in F3. I mean, for sure, last year there were flashes of really good speed. I think Hungary, Silverstone, he was always at the front. So yeah, I mean, it seemed like Campos are strong this weekend. I guess we'll see in Jeddah in a couple of weeks if that form continues. But I think we've seen in the past in F2 as well. It's almost pretty much every team at least can be in the fight for pole. This weekend seemed like a bit of an exception with Teo's lap
It's
and
just three
quali.
quarters of a second ahead, nothing big.
Yeah, I've never really seen anything like it. So crazy. But normally, at least in F2, I mean, you saw last year Fittipaldi in the Charrues was scoring podiums. It seems like the field is a bit more bunched up, at least compared to F3, where there are maybe five teams who can consistently be up there. So yeah. It'll be interesting to see whether Kush can maintain the form, and Campos in general.
Well, I have to ask you without a Logan Sargeant champion. So you're completely, well, you maybe got Prema. So I'm going to say completely unbiased for Formula 2, but a pick for Formula 2 champion from Zach O'Sullivan?
I think it would be silly not to go for share after round one. But we'll see. I mean, I think everyone will get better throughout the year. I think sometimes Bahrain is a bit of an anomaly in F3 and F2. I don't know why. It seems like the degradation can be a bit inconsistent sometimes. And for sure, you saw in the feature race, the main result kind of determined the result the most was how much degradation you have. And throughout most of the season, that doesn't seem to be the case. It's more about pace. So we'll see. But for sure, I mean, ART and Porsche were super, super strong in Bahrain.
Yeah, it's looking quite Max Verstappen levels of dominance with the way the Porsche worked. Now, thank you so much, Sacco Punditon. Sacco Sullivan, however, I suspect you're going to be in Formula 2 no matter what happens this season. That's just my thoughts. If you're joining a team as prestigious as Prema, if you're as talented as you are, that would be what I imagine. But do you have any minimum requirements that are set out on you about making that step up? And what are your hopes for 2024 in general, or 2023 to reach 2024?
Three. I mean, we've got to see. Hopefully, have a bit of a stronger weekend in Melbourne, and then go from there. I think it's hard to put like a number on it. You saw last year in F3 how you could have super strong pace, but at the end, it's so close that not always the championship standings, let's say, to tell the true story. Obviously, intention is to try and win the championship. So we'll see. I mean, that would be a very nice result. And in terms of expectations, guidelines, I think they're only like personal expectations, rather than anything set by anyone else.
Fair enough, fair enough. Now, you mentioned Melbourne just as a last question from me before we go on to the questions from the audience. Melbourne is next. That is brand new venue for the feeder series to go to. Speaking just before the podcast started, you say you've never been to Australia, you can make a bit of a trip out of it. How do you prepare for this? Is it just all simulator work? Do you think that's going to give you a massive advantage having state-of-the-art Williams simulator?
We'll see. I did a bit of stuff with Williams on the sim last year at the race weekend time, and then obviously I'll do a bit more this year. Plus some stuff with Prema. It's quite tricky. I mean, it's obviously because it's a street circuit, which always changes slightly every year. I think barrier placements change slightly. The surface is new
Made
every
a
year.
big
So
change last year, didn't it? From what it was like
yeah,
before.
exactly. Yeah. So you never quite know. I mean, all the teams have all have a scan of the year before circuit, and they'll try and get a current year one just before the event. But I mean, there's only so much sim you can do. I think by the time you get on track, you'll get a better idea of the bumps, how the tires work, because we're going in pretty much completely blind to it. So I think all F3 and F2 teams, a bit of sim stuff, and then see how it goes really.
That's enough questions for me because the Feeder Series podcast is for you, viewers and listeners. We're going to move on to the hashtag AskFS part of the podcast. If this is your first time watching or listening, you can get involved by using the hashtag AskFS on Twitter, joining our Discord, and using the podcast questions channel, as loads of people did this week, it seems, and commenting on our YouTube videos or by keeping an eye out on our Instagram posts and stories. Zach, you already know because you are, of course, one of the members on our Discord, and I say it in the podcast, there's 300 real-life drivers. Zach is an example of one such driver who do spend time there. I saw you even reply to one of the questions, actually,
I did.
earlier. So you've had a little advance warning about some of the outlandish questions, let's call them. But I don't think you've seen all of them because we've also got a load from Instagram and a load from Twitter. Now, this first question comes from Yuri Kasdorp, who I believe is an esports racer. I don't know if you've raced against him. You're nodding away a little bit.
I've briefly raced against him, but I've known him through some racing, etc.
Okay, well,
I
he's
haven't seen the
asked.
question yet,
Okay, well, his
so.
question is quite simple. Have you considered simply pressing the throttle harder yet?
Maybe I should. I was pushing it quite hard in Bahrain, but
Didn't work
in Melbourne, I'll make it.
that
No, in Melbourne, I'll push it even harder if I can.
Well, it looks like we've had Yuri answering all your questions there. So you say about
Yeah.
the esports, is that something you do in the in your spare time as well?
Only kind of recreationally. I mean, I think for esports to get pretty good at it, you need to do a lot of time. So in the off season, I'll spend a bit more time doing iRacing, etc. But in season, it's quite funny. You'll go to a race weekend, have a bit of time off. You'll get quite good on the sim, and then you come back and you're completely rusty again because your brain kind of takes a while to readjust to sim driving. So if I have a lot of time off, I'll kind of go quite hard on the sim racing kind of stuff. But otherwise, just have a bit of fun.
Fair enough. I've enjoyed iRacing. I haven't done it for a while myself, but when I get there, I'll hit you up. We'll have a race and you can embarrass me properly. Speaking of embarrassing, this next question I know you've had sight of was from Dom Bessel. And he wants to know, have you ever had a messy night in Moo Moo's Cheltenham? Which is a very specific question, Zach, and I wonder why.
So I live near Cheltenham in the UK, and there is a nightclub called Moo Moo's. I haven't had a messy night, not that I can remember at least. So,
Well, that's the best night, the ones you can't remember, they're the
yeah,
messy
exactly. So,
nights.
very specific question from Dom, but no, I don't think so.
You don't think so? The night was so
I'm a
messy, you
bit
can't remember
concerned.
it.
Yeah, I'm a bit concerned that he knows about the place, to be honest. He must be local.
Maybe so, maybe so. Maybe Moomoo's just has that sort of reputation. Complete aside, with kind of the questions we got, it's from Tom Evans Photos, who asked, you've said previously that Williams Driver Academy has given you a large insight to the real runnings and operation to a Formula One team. But what has been the biggest change in your career since joining?
I think in general, just having a bit more of a support network around me. Obviously, I always had a few couple of people always around me, but now I think if stuff isn't going to plan or I need to lean on anyone, there's kind of relevant F1 knowledge to lean on, which is always really useful. And even talking to Alex, except they've all been through, and Logan to a degree, they've all been through the same phases I've been through, often with similar teams. So there's even familiar names they know, engineers, etc. So I think any relevant experience and knowledge I can lean on is really useful. And as I said before, seeing the ins and outs of how an F1 team works, how they tackle problems, because at the end of the day, it is F1. It's a bit of a different world, but it's still a race car with four wheels and a front wing and a rear wing. So some of the issues faced by F1 teams and F3 teams, they're all quite similar. So it opened my eyes a bit, especially last year, to seeing, oh, actually, that's something I'm struggling with, or we're struggling with, actually working on similar things.
How much time do you get to speak? Say, speaking to Alex Albon, that is, and Logan's obviously Logan Sargeant's. Not many Logans that really make it into Formula One, but how much access and how much time do you spend with these guys? Or is it like WhatsApp messages? How does that work?
Obviously, on the race weekends, I see them briefly, whether I'm at hospitality or etc. Obviously, they've got a job to do as well. Also, some of the PR and media events we do, they're there, and they're super open, which is nice to see. But yeah, I appreciate they've got a job to do. They don't want me pestering them about F3 advice too much.
No, well, if you want to get some F3 advice, Logan Sargeant is the man to do it. I mean, he had some terrific seasons as well. You talk about the Giroux with
Did.
Fittipaldi earlier. He did wonders with his F3 car. This next question is from M. Hi, Zach. You have said that you are taking your A levels this year. How do you balance studying with racing? I'm also taking them this year and can't imagine having so much time away from home with a large workload. Good luck for the rest of the season. Not good luck for the exams, by the way, just the rest of the season. So
Just the season.
it's important stuff.
Yeah. I think the short answer is it's not easy. I'm gonna have to see. I'm revising, well, I'm studying for the exams, revising for them. But it looks like, well, the exams are in kind of May and June time, and we just happen to have Monaco, Barcelona, and Imola testing, I think. So we'll see. I mean, racing is my number one priority, so I think I'm almost doing it for education's sake, and then I'll see if I miss an exam, then we'll try to reschedule to November on the retake dates. But it's not ideal. Obviously, there's always a compromise, but yeah, I'm trying my best so far.
You find it kind of frustrating that you've had what, like 6 months of an off season and now it starts when the season starts.
Yeah, exactly. And even I say I'll get good at school. I kind of get into the rhythm of lessons and stuff in the off season. It's quite nice. And then the problem is I'll go away for 2 weeks or whatever, and I'll obviously try to do some stuff whilst I'm away. And then you get back, and you're kind of it's two steps forward, one steps back all the time.
Yeah, that's something. I mean, I hated exams at the best of times
Yeah.
too. You've got to do racing or you want to do racing. It was like playing football
Yeah.
manager for me back in the day, but you want to go and get in a sim, it's totally different. This one's from a familiar name to Feeder Series, us as in the platform, as well as Feeder Series in general. It's from Chris McCarthy. Some might know him as the F3 commentator, some might know him as the Transfer Weekly host, the other show on the Feeder Series YouTube channel. He wants to know, how excited are you to take on Australia and Monaco this season?
Really excited. Australia will be a new one, obviously, for everyone. So that kind of excites me a bit. Obviously, no one has any experience of it going into the weekend. The teams are all blind, which is quite cool. I think it's the first time for a while that's happened to F3, probably since the first year. So yeah, that'd be really cool. Obviously, only 45 minutes of practice. So you've got to kind of get onto it quickly and then you're straight into qualifying. So looking forward to Australia. The racing should be good as well with, I think it's 3 DRS zones. So yeah, plenty of action. And then Monaco, it's a kind of mixture of looking forward to it and also knowing it's going to be quite a hectic, stressful weekend.
How do you generally do on iRacing or the F1 games? How do you usually go?
I'm okay. But I mean, you can always reset in iRacing, can't you? So, we'll see. I mean, it's a bit of a tricky weekend. Obviously, there's two groups in qualifying, so there's a lot more variables than other races. Plus, obviously, the Freca drivers have pretty relevant experience from Monaco, so I've got a bit of catching up to do. But yeah, it'll be an interesting weekend. But I think, in a way, it's good that F3 are finally going to Monaco because. It'd be even worse if you went straight to F2, having never driven Monaco, I think. So it's good getting that experience in prior to going to Formula 2.
That'd be amazing. I'm really looking forward to that weekend. Little humble brag, Zach, and I know we mentioned maybe racing and iRacing one day. Just got to warn you, I have completed a 50% full race or 50% race distance on F1 2017 or something. Didn't lose my front wing once at Monaco. So, I mean, that's a professional right there. So you might have your work cut out. next question is from Captain Bluebeard on Discord.
Okay.
How often have you been told you look like Lando Norris?
So I've been in this for, it started really once I was announced for Williams and everyone was like, oh, he looks like Lando and Lance Stroll. And I kept asking my friends, like, do you see it? And they didn't. So I don't know. I keep getting told, I've been told it a lot, but I don't really understand it. I guess a similarity might be there, but I don't really see it.
I remember the last time you were on the podcast, you went with a so and then went into quite a enthused answer as well. That you like, well, so this is a situation.
It's, yeah.
This
is every time there's like
a nerve.
Let's say Williams posts something about me. I just look on Twitter and it's like, he looks like Lando. Oh, it's Lando. Oh, I thought Lando was announced for Williams or something like that. So
so it happens a lot. Anyway, is a short answer, yeah.
The short answer is it happens a lot, but I can't understand it.
Well, Lando is reasonably posh. And Sir Callan Edwards on this.
Oh, no.
I had to ask it. Sir Callan Edwards on Discord wants to know what it's like to be the poshest driver on the F3 grid.
So, yeah, this is another thing that I've been told before. Apparently, I'm the poshest driver in F3. Again, I don't really know. I don't know what it's like to be the poshest. I guess if you think I am the poshest driver, that I am the poshest driver. But yeah, I can't really inform you what it's like to be the poshest driver in F3.
There's no denials, though. That's a key thing for me, Zach.
There's no I mean, I can't, even if I say no, people are still going to say it. It's like the Lando Norris lookalike claims.
Just ask your butler to get the answer for you.
Oh, God.
Maybe you can change it all by Tro Huxio with his question of, will you ever wear Crocs in the paddock? Because I don't know if posh people wear Crocs in the paddock, Zach.
Only if they're in sports mode.
Yeah, I saw you is, answer that.
Yeah.
Go on.
I answered it in Discord as well. But when you put the... You put them in sports mode by putting the little, I don't know what it's called. It's not
DRS
even a
cliff, flap.
It's like the DRS flap. Yeah, DRS open into the paddock. So, yeah. I mean, I haven't actually got a pair of Crocs. I'm not a massive fan. But maybe I should wear them into the paddock.
That would stop everything. I'll tell you what, I was also not a fan of Crocs, but I had to go in the garden a few times to go and get the dog in and then do just quick things to go into the garden. Crocs are amazing for that. They're just like outdoor slippers. So shout out for the Crocs there. I think that's two podcasts in three now that Crocs have been mentioned. Thanks a lot for that, Tro. There are a load of questions from Instagram. I'm going to go through, as many as I can right now. This one is from, I have to start with this one because the name is amazing. This is from Zach O'Sully fan. And I want to know, What are your hobbies when you are not racing?
What are my hobbies when I'm not racing?
Going to
Well, at the
Moomoo's.
moment, it's pretty much as soon as I get back, it's catch up with some schoolwork that I've missed. Come May or June, May slash June, I should be finished with that, which would be nice. In general, I mean, it's quite tricky. I'm always kind of racing orientated. Something that I enjoy is a bit of graphic design, on Photoshop, etc.
It's just like Lando.
Mainly, oh my God. Mainly for just for a bit of fun. Like I can switch off. It'll just be random projects I start. So yeah, I'm even after a race day or something, I just jump on Photoshop for a bit and mock something up for a bit of fun. So yeah, I enjoy it. I wouldn't call it a hobby, but something that keeps me entertained that isn't something kind of generic.
You're not getting paid for it. I'd call that a hobby. That's the definition of hobby, something
Yeah,
you like
it's a
to
hobby.
do.
There you go.
You're so quick to change your mind, Zach. It is a hobby.
Yeah, it is a hobby. If you say it's a hobby, it's a hobby.
This question's from Joe Aiden. If you could pick one driver to spend a day with, who would it be and why? It's a good question.
Any drive,
Well,
any driver.
you've heard the whole question, so I guess you can interpret it however you like.
Interpret it how I want. Any driver.
It could go
God.
past or present, dead or alive, in F3,
Yeah, that's what
F1,
I'm
anything.
thinking. I think Michael Schumacher. I think it would be really interesting, just to discuss, because I think the obviously he was super successful, kind of
I
changed the
noticed,
way.
yeah.
Changed the way I think kind of modern motorsport is in terms of the training aspect, the attention to detail, but also I think his career, he went through such a wide span of cars and kind of the general way the sport was. When he joined in the 90s, it was still quite old school. I mean, he still had a H-pattern gearbox when he first joined, and I'd say it was a bit more relaxed. And then when he left in about 2012, it's pretty much as it is now, super, super modern. So although his career wasn't, I mean, Kimi had just as long as a career, Fernando's probably even going to outlast that. I think the actual time span he went across was so interesting, the amount the sport changed. So it'd be interesting just hearing how almost how it went, how the progression, how certain drivers changed, engineers, etc. Because yeah, I think his kind of time period was the transition from, let's say, old school Formula One into modern F1. It's pretty interesting.
That's a really good answer, Zach. That's I know a lot of people say Michael Schumacher, the reasons you gave though, tremendous answer. Well done.
Yeah.
No, I really enjoyed that. This question is a brilliant question from Gabe Doyle Parfait. What was the feeling pulling out of the pit lane in the Formula One car for the first time?
Mainly nerves, I'd say.
Don't bin
Because,
it.
like, yeah, when you get into a new car as well, it's a bit, it's always a bit strange because everything feels a bit different. And obviously, the pit lane, you don't usually get to experience that. But coming up to the pit limiter, I managed to like light up the rears by accident. And I was on just a set of install wets, and it wasn't the most confidence-inspiring experience. So I was like, uh-oh. So when I actually released the pit limiter, I was like, oh God, it's a little powerful than a three car at least. But after that, it all kind of settled into it. It was just getting used to the speed, etc. So yeah.
So, crapping yourself is
Nerves.
this. Yeah, I was going to say, crap yourself is the short version of it.
Yeah, like normally you find out the hard way on track, you have a bit of a snap or something, but when it's in the pit lane, it's a bit because you have time to think about what's going to happen next, which isn't always a good thing.
How was it with the downforce when it finally kicked in? Because obviously, a Formula One car in the pit lane is the worst car you could
Yeah.
have, with being the size of about two double-decker buses. And then you get out, you get
Yeah.
downforce, grip. How was that?
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, my neck didn't have much to say about it, but yeah, it's insane. But everything about it, obviously the current cars are a bit less, I'd say, ergonomic. I mean, like the obviously 2021 cars had super good ride, could almost go over any curve, etc. So comparing, at least from when I'd last been there in F3, where we were having to avoid curves, avoid bumps and everything, it was like a different world. Even with the gearbox, you can't, because they're completely synced, you can't feel the downshifts, you can't feel the upshifts. So yeah, it's insane. Although, like you mentioned earlier, actually at slow speed the cars are actually quite clumsy because of how big they are. and you really do notice it. You're like, oh my God, it's just a big long thing to, I think they're like, what, 6 meters long?
It's really about double like the area of a free car from the top down, right?
That's the thing, yeah. So at slow speed, they're actually quite clumsy, but as soon as you get the downforce up there, it's just insane.
Yeah, we'll hopefully get more runs in it sooner than later as well. Maybe even next year, this year, possibly?
I guess it depends on how my super license situation comes along. So, yeah, we'll see.
Fingers crossed. Well, you've had a taste now. You need to have more of it. Let's go from a few more. This is from, I have to ask a question, because Dan Boshung Stan. So if you're a fan of Boshung, you're a friend of mine.
This is your secret account.
It's not my secret account. Somebody vying for the presidency of the unofficial Ralph Boshung fan club. But they want to know, if you could pick any racing number, what would it be and why?
I guess it's related to if I got to F1 at something.
I presume so,
I would go for number 51. It's the number I use when in F4 and GB3 when you had a choice of number. 51 it was. And why? So actually, initially, when I started karting, it was 55. That was my preferred number, because my dad's car range had 55 in it when I first started racing.
So that's the reason.
Literally the reason. We went to sign on and I went to pick a number for a test day, and I was like 55. Then I quite liked the number because it was, I can't remember the answer. What's the word when this it can be reversed and still be the same number?
Palindrome. I knew it at some point. Is something with a word and over the same with numbers.
I don't know, something like that. Anyway, I thought it was cool. But when I got to like national level racing, like the British Championships, because there were so many people entered to the races, 55 turned out to be quite a popular number. So I'd often get given like 54 or 56 or 53 or whichever was closer to 55. Because if you signed up to the race a bit late, and one race I got given 51. So obviously signed up pretty late. And it was Kart Masters. I don't know if you're aware of the race.
Very familiar with it.
Yeah. And I won the race. And it's my first race on 51. And I was like, sorted. 51 it is. And so when I got a chance to pick my number, it was actually Ginetta Juniors. Someone took 55 again. And I was like, that's it. 51 forever. I'll stay with that.
I like how superstitious seemingly all motor racing drivers are. That there's always some reasoning behind. Unless you can be Raikkonen.
And he just, didn't he want to pick something that was the nearest available number or
something like that? I think he was just going down the list. It was some fun. Yeah. But let's go a few more. This one's also a fun one. And I know you know about this one as well. Isaac Hajar's number 2 fan, which is a great username. Can I name one of my Dungeons and Dragons bosses after you? I'm calling him Zach O'Sullivan. Round of applause for that. He's an undead
pirate. Nearly as good as Zach O'Sullivan. Yep.
It's so versatile, your name.
Yeah.
So is that allowed? Are you happy for that? Are you wanting to have Zach O'Sullivan?
That's fine. There's no patents on my name yet. So he can, yeah. Is it Scullivan? Scullivan or Scullivan?
Well, you've got Sullivan and Scullivan. So both.
Perfect. Okay.
Get the copyright lawyers out of your
plotness. He can take it. Yeah. As long as he does well, because then people will think it's me or something on there.
Of course, yeah, if it's doing badly.
I've got to take the credit, yeah.
Let's have a look, a few more questions. We've got Ash Schley here. I don't know if you answered this last time, but Zach, what is your favourite cheese? Did you answer your cheese last time? I don't remember.
I think I did, but I've forgotten what my favourite cheese is.
Well, now you have to answer it and see if you were lying the first time.
I think, I'm going to have to remember. I would say for like a normal cheese on something, Parmesan, obviously Italian team, so pasta is a bit more prominent in my diet this year. But actually, like for a meal or something, I'd happily have burrata.
Okay.
I don't know if it's a cheese, but it's a bit, not really a cheese, is it?
It's better than saying cheese string, so.
Okay, so burrata, like for a starter or something, I have a burrata salad. So Parmesan for like a gratable cheese, burrata for cheese full stop.
Gratable cheese. I don't think anybody ever differentiate that.
There you go, hard cheese and soft cheese.
We've had the question asked so many times, but never an answer when somebody has to say about their grated versus a non-grated. sticking on food, Biusilius. Oh, I don't know how to pronounce that. Sorry, Biusilius. 30. What is your favorite food?
Favorite food? Oh God, I would say tacos.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, like really good tacos, especially
What
they have lime
what's
with
in
them
them?
and beef.
Beef taco, beef asada taco, something
Big
like
beef
that.
taco. Yeah. But it's not even, I mean, it's not that unhealthy as well.
It can be if you want it to
It's
be.
not, it can be, but they're not ridiculously unhealthy. So I can almost have my favorite food without it being like a cheat meal, which is quite good.
As somebody who lived in Mexico for most of last year, I can attest that tacos are one of the best things you
Yeah.
can have. So you have that one. And then this question from Katrin. You have a nice fashion sense. What is your favorite clothing
My
item?
God.
Not a good fashion
I
sense, a
don't.
nice one.
Nice. Thank you. I don't really have one, to be honest. I mean, probably the things I wear most are like, yeah, exactly. I was about to say Williams. Oh, there's no, oh, there is an umbrella. Like, there you go. Umbro.
Yeah, took a while, but got there
Great.
eventually.
Yeah. Umbro training tops from Williams. Obviously, on any roast weekend, I'll be wearing those. So, yeah, probably the Williams stuff. And also, this year, they're very nice. And I think navy blue
What
is
were you
all on
saying about
brand.
last year,
So,
though, Zach? My God.
well, the last year, all the academy drivers got the F1 stuff. Whereas this year we have our own academy kit, so a bit more unique.
Well recovered. I tried to get you stuck in the stuck in
Exactly.
trouble there, and there's no fooling you. And maybe this just goes with our last question here. In fact, no, there's two questions from Melise. One of them was, if you could only wear merch for the rest of your life, and it could only be from one person, whose merch would it be?
Yep.
Williams Racing, I'm guessing, is the answer now.
Oh, okay.
Well, no,
Well,
you might have a different answer. Go on.
okay, well, A, Williams merch, and B, if I had to pick like a driver's merch, actually Danny Rick's merch is quite nice, and the branding's subtle enough for it not to be noticeable that you're wearing an F1
Okay.
driver's merch.
It's all good always. I
It shouldn't
get.
be plastered across, yeah.
Yeah. But then the second question they had, which is terrific. What is the strangest slash weirdest picture you have taken with a supporter?
Oh, there's a lot. I think every F3 driver is going to have the same answer. So there was this fan who came to, I don't see that like last four races last year, and she would take like a forehead selfie.
A what?
A forehead selfie. I can't explain it on, but like she'd place her phone below, and then you both look into it from below, from above, and it would just take a picture of your four, both of our foreheads.
So you wouldn't see a smile or anything, you
You
just
wouldn't
see.
see, you just see eyebrows and a bit of eyes on both people.
Oh, she's going around saying you got this
I
picture of
think,
Lando Norris when she gets one with you.
so yeah, I'd say they're the strangest ones maybe. But it was just a bit, I was like, because I did the fan zone a couple of times last year, and it was normal people wanting selfies, and I like, can I have a
When
forehead picture?
abnormal
So
people wanting
I'm not going to comment, but yeah,
forehead.
she's probably got like four pictures of my forehead in her camera roll somewhere, as is most of the F3 grid, I think.
What an effort, though. That's
I
I
know.
did I
It's
didn't know
unique. I
what the
mean,
answer was going
look,
to be, and then that was the answer. Amazing.
it worked because I remember it and it stood out, didn't it? So.
Yeah, well, when you are a 10-time world champion, then there's only one person in the world who's going to have the most pictures of your forehead. So well done to that fan. Zach, thank you so much. That's a lot of questions we
No
got through
problem.
as well in not an awful lot of time. So you did well as a pundit, you did well as a guest. So I'm going to say thank you, and that's all the time we have this week. Thank you if you watched and listened this far. If you'd like to have your question asked on a future episode, use the hashtag AskFS on Twitter. Drop any questions below if you're watching on YouTube. Respond to our Instagram stories or posts, or let us know what questions you have on your mind on our Discord. Look for the podcast questions channel and send abuse to Zacho. What's your name on that? Zach O'Sullivan, real?
Yeah, real. Or Zacho Pundit Van.
There's
There's all sorts
loads.
now. Zacho Scullivan, Zacho Sullifan. Yeah. Three new names now.
Exactly. Create your own Zach persona and join the Discord to have some fun. If you're watching on YouTube, drop a like on the video, leave a comment, and subscribe to the channel. It all really helps us out. And if you're listening, leaving a review on the podcast platform you're listening on is greatly appreciated. Finally, check out feederseries.net for more Feeder Series insights and follow Feeder_Series, FS Americas and Feeder Series Now on Twitter. You can find the links to all of those, plus the Twitter accounts for myself and Zach O'Sullivan, or Sully Stan, or whatever his name is, in the podcast show notes or the YouTube description. Until next time, we have been the Feeder Series Podcast. Goodbye.